And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared here and declare your independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of freedomsphoenix.com. Karen Katowski, Dr. Karen Katowski. She got a PhD. I'll call her doctor. Retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, former Pentagon officer, professor. And she's been a libertarian candidate for, big supporter of Dr. Ron Paul and longtime libertarian. We knew about her when she's writing about what was happening inside the Pentagon over at Lou Rockwell and Colonel Hackworth's page that he had on them damn internets, where she was publishing and saying what's up. And I tell you, people did not like it none too much. But Karen got away. I don't know how the hell she got away with this. You know, she's telling all this stuff and then goes out, yeah, I'm retiring. It was me, you misogynist, thinking it was a guy. Guys, and now I kicked you. I was sitting right there and you kind of mind, you want to hear about it? Wrote a song about it, like to hear it, here it go. And they go, eh, maybe not. So they left you alone. But you haven't went in hiding. I mean, you've been out there. So we get to talk to Karen. Now, this is the one thing that I wanted to talk about. Well, anything with Karen because she's so smart. But child of the state, man of war. This is good. And now John Sidney McCain III is a corpse in a morgue awaiting his state burial. It is as it should be, perhaps for the first time in his entire life. And then it went on from there. And then it got bad. So here we have, and then here in Arizona, we're like, God, thank God. There was no celebration. There was no big, giant, you know, anybody cared. It was like, yeah, okay, wow. Ding, dong, you know, is dead. So I go, and this is, but here in Arizona, I don't know about the rest of the world, but USA Today, and they stayed in the convenience stores for a week or more, sitting there, nobody getting them, full page, entire USA Today type tabloid with John McCain bio. They're turning him into a hero. That was the deal. And everybody's like, are you kidding me? We live in Arizona. We know better. Go sell that in New York or something. So his whole thing, he goes, and then Governor Ducey replaces him with John Kyle. Yay, we're so much better off. So the machine is still in place. Now, from your perspective, man, you just dumped on John. You know, I knew him well enough. I ran against him, debated him, you know, went before, you know, editorial boards and stuff. So I get it. He was a loose, to put it this way. One thing that depicts what he was, he went to a gun show, a Crossroads of the West gun show, and he was in there. I was there after he had went by, and people told me what was going on. They were freaking out. John walked through, and somebody cornered him and got him on assault weapon ban or some anti-gun thing that he did. What are you doing here, you scumbag? He turns red, as he would, and got mad. And they were like, he had eight physically, you know, they're like, hold him back, hold me back. I'm going to kick me. And he gets angry. He was an angry guy. And so whenever we were in the elevator or we're going to different things, I'm, hey, John, what's up, man? Yeah, it's all good. Because I never went after him or any guys personally. It's what they represent. They know what I'm talking about. And I don't care about him. You know, the next guy is like Kyle. I mean, you know, so what's the difference? So the thing is, give us your, obituary, your eulogy on Ugly, your eulogy on
Ugly.
On John McCain. Go.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, good riddance is the thing, and it's unfortunate. But I think what's important about and I did not know that USA Today had done a whole issue on him, and that tells you something that that should be scary to everybody in this country, because he was the state leader. He was a guy that the federal government, not Arizona, but the federal government built up. He's a image of the swamp, if you want to call it the swamp, but it's worse than a swamp. I mean, a swamp is a natural environment. What we have in D.C. is worse than a swamp. I mean, it's a machine. It's an anti-human machine. It's an anti-environmental machine. It's a deadly control machine. And he was a key part of that, a key part of it from the very beginning. And they could use his heroism. They could call it, you know, because he was this, you know, a prisoner, POW, of course, we know, and in the military, wore a uniform from a military family. And they easily take the jump from that to hero. And so they made this story, which I guess was republished and elaborated on in that USA, you know, USA Today thing. And, of course, even the of course, the liberal editorial pages and the conservative editorial pages all seem to jump in and laud him. You know, why is he so great? Well, he's great because the state made him great. He was a parasite of the state, really. I mean, he was the iconic parasite his whole life, and that's kind of what I was writing with child of the state kind of thing. His whole life was dependent on the federal government. I mean, came from a longtime military family, which made its money on war, made its fame on war. You know, so this is what you're dealing with.
Remind the audience who his father was.
Well, he was an admiral, four-star admiral, and at the time that McCain was wrecking airplanes over in the Pacific Ocean, his dad was the Pacific commander, I believe. I'm not 100% sure, but his father was instrumental in helping cover up the attack on the Liberty, I think, to some extent.
The USS Liberty, late 60s, during the Six-Day War, or whatever the war was in Israel.
Yep. Yeah. Sure. So his dad was a part of the machine, which is a meshing of the state and media. And again, I did not realize USA Today did that because, you know, I don't see the USA Today where I am. I didn't know.
USA Today, the newspaper. It was like a tabloid newspaper that they did, that they they produced and put it out for anybody to get. I don't know if it was just Arizona, but they thought it was going to be popular. And I saw them everywhere. Nobody was picking them up.
Nobody was buying them, yeah, because the media is not working for consumers, even though it is a marketplace, obviously. I mean, they want to sell papers and whatnot. They want to sell ads, so they want those papers in people's homes so they can sell ads. But that industry has changed, and the content is I think, for left and right media alike, is owned by the state. I mean, it's mostly what you read. If you're not reading it, if you're not listening it on your radio program or like radio independent media, if you're not reading it from independent media sources, you know, or overseas sources, and not all of those, just some, you're getting the government perspective, and it can be left and it can be right, but you're getting the government story. And I'll tell you a good place to see what that is to look at, and I don't know how many people do this, but never subscribe to it, but Foreign Affairs magazine, which is the mouthpiece of the Council on Foreign Relations, you know, CFR, and that. If you look at their headlines week after week, you get that is the guideline. That's kind of the overarching. Where's the state? What's the state saying? What does the state want you to know? People in this country aren't buying that. That's why Trump was elected, because we didn't want to buy what the state was telling us. We heard this new guy, and he was saying stuff that made sense. You know, who knows if he could do it? You know, who knew if he could do it? Who knows if he is doing it? But his message actually competed in the marketplace of ideas there and caught fire. And much like I think Ron Paul's had done back when Ron Paul ran.
When we come back, I'm going to, over the break, I'm going to share with Karen the Netanyahu wants to redraw the map in Golan Heights. Russia says, go to the UN Security Council and talk to them about it. No, but we want to do a deal because, you know, like Cheney owns the company that found oil there and we want to give it to them. You know, we're going to get Karen's view on that. We'll be right back. From the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the Crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the Crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the Crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The Crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the Crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation, a difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the Crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The Crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the Crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the Crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com.
Ooh, that's a good one there. The we got the letters of Mark published on Amazon. You know, we figured out how to do that because Davi knows how to do that. I go, you can do that? Let's do that. Boom, got it up there. So I can get the book, but we have a bunch coming. I got a list here of people I want to send them to as a gift for Christmas. It'll be an early Christmas present for you. So it'll be fun. This is what happened. Netanyahu goes to wants to change the status of the Golan Heights, you know, and from it being a direct violation of the United Nations Security Council to it's ours, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm you know, it's been 51 years, so I mean, I guess possession is 9/10 as far as they're concerned. But mm-hmm. This is with all this serious stuff. I get the feeling that they're going, look, you want us to be nice? We will not bother you anymore. I tell you what, Israel be nice and we'll recognize and do and work with or something as long as Putin gets Syria to let Cheney have his oil field.
Mm.
And you know about the oil thing?
Not really. Okay. Update me on that.
All right, real quick. This is what happened. There's some Rothschild guy. Dick Cheney, I think Rumsfeld, you know, Summers, I mean, it's just they, them, those, neocons,
mm-hmm.
got a permission, where the hell that is, from Israel to do oil exploration. Well, they found a bunch of, I don't know, natural gas, oil, something, some petroleum there, and in the Golan Heights. Well, they go, yep, mm-hmm. we give you first right, and it's yours, and kind of if you can, I don't know, get an oil well there, I guess you can keep it, okay? So it's called Genie, or Genesis. I think it's Genie. Genie Corporate. If you look up Genie Energy, Cheney, Golan, it'll blow up all over the place. And this was years ago that we saw this. And I'm going, mm-hmm. oh, and now it's rearing its head. Here we go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. We're coming back.
Yeah, I see it.
Mm-hmm. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, we might as well. Trump! Oh, I don't know. Karen hadn't even said the word Trump yet. You know, we'll see what she has to say about that. You know, this is, we got, I wanted to make sure Karen knew about this Golan Heights thing. And I'm just wondering, you know, just from the headlines, and you kind of pull up a story about, you know, and is it Genie or Genesis?
Yeah, Genie.
Yeah, Genie Energy is Cheney and friends.
I mean, it's you go down, it's like a Rothschild in there. They got some financial guys, neocon, of they, them, those, that go, you know what, we can get Israel to give us a concession, and we can drill for oil in the Golan Heights, which is recognized by the United Nations and everybody else as Syria. And Israel took it over in the late 60s and 51, yeah, it's ours. And everybody goes, no, it's not. Yeah, it is. No, it's not. Yeah, it is. And I'm wondering, yeah, Syria want to do a war? Is Russia kind of putting in, giving them a bunch of free missiles and kind of, you know, and I think Israel's starting to get nervous and they want to make a deal. What kind of deal might they make, Karen?
Well, you know, it's interesting, the possession being nine-tenths, it's possession if they can hold it. It's not... You know, a lot of times, you know, in normal real estate law, if you're using someone's property or driving over it or whatever with no complaints for X amount of years or decades, then you lose some property rights. There have been constant complaints about what Israel is doing at the UN level, at the Syrian level, at the neighborhood level, all around the world. So possession is nine-tenths, except this possession has been challenged for 50-something years as being illegal and wrong, and they've had skirmishes over it. So clearly, that I don't think – I'm sure they would like to say possession is nine-tenths, but, you know, it doesn't work that way legally. So they need that legal blessing, clearly, to do what they're doing. I guess they're ready to – I mean, the discovery and the deals were made back in 2013, 2014, 2015. Yeah. So they've known about this for a while. You know, Cheney is much sicker than he was then and 5 years ago.
Oh, he's still alive?
He is very, barely. I think he's barely alive.
Is he going to get a USA Today pamphlet?
Oh, I'm sure he will. I don't know. He's like Darth Vader. They love to hate him. You know, they might do it just because, you know, more people might buy that. I imagine... you know, he is identified very negatively. He was never a war hero. You know, for every year that John McCain spent in a POW camp, Dick Cheney was getting a deferment. So I don't think Dick Cheney falls into the he's not a hero. So I'm not sure if they'll be able to milk that one. He's well hated. He's well hated.
Well, this we covered this back when it happened in 13 or so. And then you have guys like Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope doing, he's writing a book on Rothschilds and so on and doing, I'm going, do you, you know, this is last June, July, I was back in Connecticut, you know, we were visiting, and I go, hey man, do you know about this Genie energy thing? What? And I go, yeah, you want to get updated on the next Rothschild, the oil coming right here? And you go, what the heck? Where did this come from? I remember seeing it, but I go, this is going to come around sooner. And as soon as I saw some other rumblings about this and the Syria thing and Israel getting involved, I knew it was neocons and they, them, those. We need to get this annexed in some way so we get to be oil tycoons.
Sure. And you know, it's neoconservatism, but it's also colonialism. It's a modern day colonialism, which Israel is a big part of. I mean, to some extent, you know, and that's something that most people, if you ask them about colonialism, they'll say, oh, of course not. We don't go for that. But neoconservatism is a neocolonialist type of approach. And they look at the world resources and they say, how do we get them? Who do we need to subvert? Who do we need to kill? Who do we need to destroy? Who do we need to topple in order to get the resources that we will profit from? And it's not necessarily the Queen of England, but it's the same families. It's the same entities that enrich themselves and have an interest, have a financial and interest in these things. So, I mean, if you know why 17 years in Afghanistan? Well, Afghanistan has a mineral profile, an energy profile, a geographic significance to energy transmission, energy transfers and logistics that make it very useful to us. So, you know, Afghanistan, want to stay there. Iraq, full of oil. You know, we want to control that. The very first executive order that George W. Bush did when we declared the victory in the Iraq War, you know, which was only done a few months after they went in, wasn't a victory. But, you know, we said, oh, we got it. He's toppled. And the first thing he did was put the gold sales back on dollars because, of course, as we know, Saddam Hussein had taken his gold exports off the dollar only a few months before that, a few months before he was invaded. I think it was the previous fall when he did that. immediately. The very first thing that George W. Bush did executive order-wise relating to Iraq after we had declared victory or success or whatever he did, mission accomplished, was to put the oil sales in Iraq, which we were now supposedly controlling, and I think that was a fair statement, back on the dollar. So, you know, what our relationship, our very warped relationship with Saudi Arabia, the most anti-democratic, anti-woman, anti-people entity, you know, in the Middle East, worse than any of the others, our biggest ally, 9/11, most of the guys from Saudi Arabia on those airplanes, 9/11 airplanes, Saudi Arabia, what'd we do? We escorted their Saudi Arabian diplomats out of the country and their families very, very quickly, very quietly, so that they couldn't be, you know, picked up by local authorities. So, you know, oil, energy, minerals, this type of resource that people can make money from, this is the interest that we have. And this is certainly the interest, I think, that that Israel has as well. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting because I think with the recent sale from Russia to Syria of their integrated air defense system, they are in a better position to defend their property there and control access to it. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it could be a big war. Obviously, they would like the U.S. and the U.N. to facilitate it so they can just take it and steal it and have it.
This isn't going well for they, them, those. I see.
No, it isn't.
Assad is not gone. You know, Russia.
What about Nikki Haley? She just quit.
Yeah. What's up with that? I didn't get into the details. Personally, I want to take off if I don't, you know, whatever the heck, and I'm going to get a job.
Nikki Haley, you know, all these Republicans, and I'm a sitting, you know, I'm a libertarian-minded person, but I actually sit in the Republican Party, and I say these things on purpose to get people uncomfortable. But Nikki Haley, all these Republicans, oh, Nikki Haley's great. No, Nikki Haley is awful, okay? Always, she's been awful as a UN ambassador. She's been overly aggressive, has disagreed and gone opposite to President Trump on a number of occasions. And she's a problem. So as far as I'm concerned, he asked her to leave. I would not be surprised at all that he does that. He doesn't keep people on staff. I'm hoping John Bolton follows her, or John Bolton receives a demotion back into Nikki Haley's job, because, you know, John Bolton held that job.
Yeah, this is one thing. John, the role of John Bolton is I in the Trump what?
Oh yeah.
I'm not his four-dimensional time travel chessboard of whatever the hell he's doing.
Well,
you know,
he might be losing. So he might not realize that the neocons consider that they own our government, and they don't give it up for anything, elections or not. So I don't know if he realizes that. I think he suspects it. It's hard to say.
What do you shop?
Yeah, I'm. We do the Trump report, and it's more, you know, superficial and whatever trips Dr. Frank's trigger on. It was on Fox, and I'm, you know, this Kavanaugh thing. I saw you wrote something about it, didn't you? I think I saw Karen Kavanaugh thing. Did you?
Well, I don't know. I did an interview. I don't know if they talked
well,
about
give me
that.
Give me your, you know, this is what's going to happen. Angela Keaton, that anti-war, you know, feminist, really sensitive to this kind of stuff, Me Too and powerful men, whatever. And she and I, probably this next week, we're going to do, you know, a few hour podcast, maybe last hour of the show and go long, and we're just going to get down to it. And I think we can have it, but she's in the middle of a anti-war fundraising thing right now, so we're going to wait. My whole thing was this. As I was talking to some other feminists, there were some people around, and they were very offended by this whole thing, and it kind of, you know, another powerful white man getting away with murder and the power differential of exploiting of whatever, and then Cody Wilson accusations, and everybody's guilty before they even started. And I'm going, whoa, this is dangerous. There's something. What is the venom behind that? I mean, is it just what? I'm not really getting it. Everybody hates men. I mean, all of a sudden you want one on a leash or something. I mean, I don't, there's something behind that. What happened to you? What is, and then it came down, I started to understand from, you know, my family interactions to, you know, men are from Mars, women from Venus. I mean, all this stuff. And I go, oh, I start to get it. And this is what I realized. Tell me if you think I'm wrong. What I started to see was that is a differentiation in power, not just political power, economic power, or this guy's got, you know, the power over and I'm your boss power, any of that power. It was physical power that I got the impression, especially small women, feel like they're, you know, salmon fishers walking, you know, going fishing in Alaska, and they got to have a 50 cal on them, you know, because of the bears, okay? So they feel that they are in constant jeopardy of their personal safety. It's like a PTSD of their whole life. They go out, they go to bars, they're walking down the road, whatever. They got these powerful men that can just pick them up and do their way with them. There's not a damn thing they can do about it. And so they were of the mind of power in a lot of its forms, but physical. And I go, okay, what if Davi and I come up with another letter or Captain Mark or B Reprisal that writes this one that would be, what if, like Sam Colt, you know, God created men, Sam Colt made them equal kind of thing. I go, what if everybody was equal? What if you had Marvel superpowers of, I got this fingernail battery strapped implant of Zapia, okay? Mm-hmm. What if women never had to worry? I mean, you know, as much as a small man or anybody else or whatever, you had the ability to defend themselves physically from anybody. Would that change your mindset?
Mm-hmm.
And none of them even thought of it.
Mm-hmm. I know. And also, it looks like they're afraid of men. And I've seen when people say, oh, the poor men are being picked on. And then the women say, hey, I have to do this. I have to do that. My whole life is filled with planning so that I don't get molested. And that's not what it is. Okay.
15
it is
seconds.
About power. It is about power, but I don't think it's physical power. It's power over resources. It's greed. It's power to force other people to do things. This is
yeah,
what power
I got. But even when
about.
It's not that, or somebody's not that threat, they still possess the physical ability. It seemed like with a lot of the people I talked to that it came down to that. That's where it. Mm-hmm. That's where its genesis is. And I'm going.
Well,
now we're
going to
talk. We'll talk. I don't think we'll do on radio. Here we come back.
This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
And we're back, Karen Katowski, talking about a bunch of stuff. Foreign policy, what's going to happen to Syria. We haven't got to Africa yet. You know, when Karen left, you're working at the Pentagon, that was... Weren't you Africa Command, Africa.com, and they just started doing it, and we just started getting into Africa? I mean, hell.
Yeah, right. Before I went to the Near East South Asia, I worked in Sub-Saharan Africa, and that included actually the western part of Africa, too, Morocco and Algeria, Tunisia, and that kind of thing.
What was that mean? And, what was your job? You were reading their newspapers? What?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we did programs and we were trying to train and get involved with these various African allies and trying to influence their militaries and be their friend and see if we get exercises and training and bases there. I mean, it was one of the big pushes, of course, which when I was there did not happen, but it happened about 2004 or 5, is they were pushing to get an African command, which they do have a combatant command called AFRICOM, which they did achieve, and they have now. And once they got AFRICOM organizationally, which still stayed up in Stuttgart, you know, it didn't have a physical location in Africa because there's many, many countries and, you know, who would get it and what that would say, you know, very political on where you would put your headquarters in Africa. And also, too, there's no real need for combatant command there. I mean, you know, they're doing the idea was they're hunting terrorists or whatever, but in any case, it's still in Stuttgart for the most part, but the very fact of creating a bureaucratic organization to focus on the continent of Africa and all of those 53 countries that are there, this enabled more and more activity, more and more resources. And so now you see a great deal of American military operations on the continent, which are not training operations, they are not advising operations, they are military combat operations. And when those guys got killed in Niger, that was a big shock. You know, people were like, what had that happen? I didn't know there were any guys down there.
What are we doing?
Guys down there. Well, we're doing lots of things. We're doing what we're doing. Okay, we focus foreign policy-wise, for the most part, American people, they understand the Middle East is a foreign policy focus area, a military focus area for Washington, D.C. They understand that. And we see that what we're doing, that we're toppling leaders, right? We're taking over property. We're destroying infrastructure, in some cases rebuilding it, most cases not, okay? So we're doing those kinds of things. We're picking friends, picking winners, picking losers, and then making it come to fruition. That's what we're doing in the Middle East. Well, that's also what we're doing in Africa. We are looking at boundary. We're looking at who are fighting and which one we want to be on the side of, because they might win or they might be our friend. We can influence them. We're looking at possible, lily pad type bases, which is what I remember Rumsfeld said we were going to do in Iraq. It's have all these lily pad bases. Now, these bases are not lily pads. They're quite large. But, you know, this idea of little portable or small bases that you can come in, then you can leave and tape them up and, you know, button them up and then come back later, a few years, whatever. We're doing that in Africa. We are picking winners and we're picking losers. We are conducting intelligence operations of all types, not just against the leaders and the opposition parties in the various countries in Africa, but also Africa and Russia and India, who are some of the major players. And Israel, I'm sure we're spying on Israel. I hope to heck we're spying on Israel and Africa, because Israel's been in Africa for a long, long time. In fact, most of our good intelligence came from Israeli sources.
Oh, yeah? What the heck is Israel doing in Africa? Well, they care.
Well, they make friends and cultivate. I mean, look, Israel is an apartheid country. Their best friend and ally, including in nuclear sharing, was South Africa at the time when it was under apartheid. So they got no problem there. Trade is big, obviously. And I think in a lot of ways, India and Israel both are trading nations to some extent. You know, I think, you know, you think of Israel, what do they produce? Well, it's a deal-making country. It's a financial center. What do they really produce? I think they produce that fizzy water machine. But for the most part, they produce some military weapons. And, of course, sales. What else do we do in Africa? We sell arms, which is what India does to some extent. But Israel, Russia, the United States, some of the European countries, we sell arms to countries, to the various.
So is Africa about ready to blow up in the warfare everywhere?
Well, it already, to some extent, has increased its warfare.
Yeah, but it was kind of a local internal civil war. We got enough AK-47s to take out our rivals or whatever.
And I believe that's still an issue. But now they have access to first world country supply systems, and that's what we provide.
One thing I want to mention, Karen, they have an African flag. I can't remember which country that has the AK-47 as like stars and stripes on the freaking flag. You know, so I'm going. They're going to start putting Patriot missiles on there now or something. I mean, what?
I don't know. I think it's you know, there's something. Something to be admired by a flag that has a weapon on it. You know, don't mess with me. That's kind of what we have with the you know, don't tread on me. That's a don't tread on me symbol.
Or a cannon for the moon is a harsh mistress.
Yeah, there you go. But you know, those flags are meaningless, because most of those countries, most of the countries in on the continent there are corrupt. I mean, we've many people economically they're corrupt, politically they're corrupt. What passes as the leadership and the state for those countries is what do they call them? It's vampire states. You know, it's confiscatory states. The actual people in most of the countries, there's very few examples where the people are actually functioning in any way that Americans would recognize as far as an economic life. Some of the other, I think to some extent Mexico would recognize it, because in Mexico you have lots of industry, but they do so kind of in spite of the criminal element and in spite of the government element. So you've got the criminal element, the government element, there's some overlap there, and then you have the actual people living their lives. That's a lot of what Africa is. And so potentially, and I think this is something that China, the Chinese excursions into Africa, and they've been for many, many decades, the Chinese have been there, and they don't really sell weapons as much as they actually try to scope out what's valuable there. And part of what's valuable to China is land, you know, food production. The Chinese are in the Midwest of America because they want to have some leverage over food production. The Chinese bought Smithfield Ham in America, a very famous long-term Virginia company to produce, you know, pork company, pork and other food products, sold to China. Why China want that? Well, there's they care about things that are important to their how many people they got, 2 or 3 billion people. They care about what those people need, and Africa potentially is a breadbasket. In fact, in some places it's a current breadbasket, relatively speaking to other parts of Africa. Certain parts of Africa are very productive in agricultural products. Yeah, so the Chinese are looking at long term, like the Chinese usually do. They take a long term view, and making friends and trying to influence people, but. You know, there's all kinds of problems.
Well, China, they're doing their, you know, Silk Road, One Belt, whatever distribution to the planet thing. And they go, they don't have enough land. They don't have enough people that could do whatever they want. Well, they want to be able to export it. They want to have control of whatever food is going on or resources there so that they can bring it here or sell to them or do it. And they bring a suitcase of money and we're going to get some. So I'm going, all right, well, China doing this is a long-term play, but they say, you're trillions of dollars in debt. It's going to crash and you're going to be able to pay your debt. And they go, yeah, but we got it built. We're going to have the infrastructure, and we're going to forgive the debt or have it, or, you know, repudiated or whatever, you know, whatever they're going to do, or we'll just sell more U.S. treasuries or something, but we got our infrastructure already,
And also, you know, when you do things that you don't really care about the people, I mean, the Chinese, much like a lot of, you don't care about African people. There's no, you know, connection there. So if things go south and things are lost or debt's repudiated and they have to abandon factories, that's not their concern. Not their concern at all.
Well, what should be their concern? I don't know. Just keep on keeping on and surveilling their population.
How about non-aggression? How about the non-aggression theory? Why don't we just apply that? That'd be a good concern for states to have. You know, whatever we do, we don't want to be aggressive. That'd be good.
No, surveillance. You know, I saw a live, it was on some article that they were showing how they do this surveillance thing. And you'll get like stop sign height, you know, a little elevated on a street sign or something on downtown Beijing, Shanghai, whatever. And so it's just like you're looking at people walking down the sidewalk in New York City. Well, they're high enough that they can see faces hundreds of yards back. And all of a sudden, a square goes up around the person, and it's either green, amber, or red. And then all of a sudden, it's based on their facial recognition and their citizen Chinese score.
The score. Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, it's kind of like out of the Black Mirror show.
Right. You know what?
Social approval score.
I like Black Mirror. They're good, and they're, you know, it's kind of Twilight Zone-y. But I have not watched all of them. They're getting built up because I just can't.
Yeah, it's too hard. I did watch that one. That was, and I think a lot of people watched that particular episode because it connected so much with so many people with social media. Identify.
All of them are good. Every one of them are freaking awesome. And I go, but it just puts that negative wave in your head, man. I'm just like, damn.
It's scary. It's scary. I mean, you know, we're almost to the point where we cannot really unplug. It's very difficult to unplug. I mean, people say like, oh, well, we're going to buy things with cash. Well, you know, if you're buying lots of things, like everything you need, you have to buy it. It's very difficult to do that with cash. So, you know, people aren't in a position to unplug. We're highly connected to each other and our government, eats that up. It's very cost effective with this technology for governments everywhere. China is a prime example, but so is our government. You know, U.S. government, same thing, you know, monitoring people. Tracking.
They're just not as proud of it.
No, we hide ours more. I mean, the Chinese actually, to some extent, keep it from their people. But, you know, China doesn't have, except for the Uyghurs and some of the other, they have 37 different languages. But in a lot of ways, China has been a unified empire for many, many centuries. And there's a lot of Chinese, and a lot of them share. Well, they do have some subcultures, and there's certain cultures that they don't like the Uyghurs or any of the Muslims in China. But for the most part, I think China, you can consider them kind of unified. And China does not have, for a number of reasons, a huge amount of immigration, people coming into China, except from North Korea. You know, they do from North Korea, which they have an issue there because people keep from North Korea keep coming over to China to escape North Korea. But for the most part, the world's populations that are in distress, they aren't going to China. You know, they're going to Europe. They're coming to America. They're going to South Central American countries.
I tell you, this is one story before we get to come back. I want to tell you this. I don't know if you saw this. The Chinese government had negotiated with the Vatican or something in that, yes, okay, we're going to let you have, allow you to have churches, but the priests have to be certified and allowed and permitted by the state.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
And
sure.
I go, yeah. Well, they, you know, what happened in Russia? I mean, they love this confessional straight to the man thing. I mean, that would be awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Confess your sins, my son.
That's right. I mean, and of course, as we know, if you confess your sins to a priest that you know is going to tell it to someone else, I don't care if it's another priest or the government, you're less likely to tell the truth. And so you further create the lying and subversive citizenry, which is what
you
see.
Well, that's how you rat on your neighbor.
That's right. Well, that's exactly how you do it. Well,
all right, here we're coming back. Let's get to it.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, we were born in the U.S. of A. Yay! Well, you know, the United States of America, or America, you know, if it didn't exist, we would dream of her. You know, this is, you know, America was the light on the hill of man, you know, I vote them until, I don't know, it's not as popular. You know, Karen was saying a lot of people, they're not, you know, expatriating to, you know, China as much as everybody wants to come to America. They want to come to America because they think America, you know, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, America, you know, and do they still, Karen, you think, is that like on top of their bucket list?
I think that's changing quite a bit. I mean, you know, we're seeing expatriates from this country formally repudiating their own citizenship to move to other places. We're seeing that. It's been rising for a decade now, and it's continuing to rise every year faster than the year before. So, we turn into a totalitarian state, or a state that entertains totalitarianism in certain parts of our part of our government, part of our society. I mean, this flag thing. You know, you got to stand for the flag. Now, a lot of people say you don't have to stand for the flag. But you know, this is a form of totalitarianism. This is a what you see in a wartime crisis-engaged country. And yet we're not in war, unless you want to call Afghanistan 17 years occupation a war. That's not a war. War on terror, that's not a war. Okay, we're not really in a war, but we're in a fake war, and because we're in a fake war, you can get away with a lot of totalitarian types of demands of your people. Who's a good person? Who's a good citizen? You know, do you follow do you toe the line? You know, there's not really free speech in this country. And we saw this, you mentioned Kavanaugh earlier. I mean, we saw this with the Kavanaugh hearings. There's no free speech in this country. It's not free speech. You know, people are interviewed. Do you believe the Dr. Ford? And she's not a doctor. Well, she's a doctor like I'm a doctor. She's an academic doctor. She's not a medical doctor. So she really is normally not addressed as doctor. Is Miss Ford, Miss Christine Ford, whatever. And the question is, do you believe her? And the answer better, by God, be yes, right? Well, look at what they did to all the Congress. Do you believe her? Oh, yes, we believe her. We believe her. Gotta believe her. That's totalitarianism. That's political correctness gone amok. You know, in the there are plenty of people that didn't believe her, including some of her best friends. But as a public entity, you must believe. That's where our society has gone. You must say this. If you are a Democrat, you must despise Trump and everything that he does, even though, while Trump is a little bit different than other Republicans, thank the Lord, okay, he's still, ultimately, the state has not, the ship of state has not really shifted much yet. You know, it's been 2 years now, right? or a little less than 2 years, has the ship of state shifted a little bit? There's some points of light. There's some chances that the military will draw back and that our empire will recede. But what have we really seen in fundamentally under Trump? We've got the deficit going up faster than ever before, the deficit spending in the Congress, uncontrolled, unlimited, okay? We've got Space Command. What the hell? Space Command? Okay, seriously?
Okay, now this is something you may know about. The Space Command, are they, you know, doing Starship Trooper space outfit Elon Musk with a, you know, a plasma rifle? You know, I mean, what, or is it they well, eventually you'll get to that. But they're doing what? Separating off of Air Force stuff? I mean, what does the Air Force have that's going to make up Space Command?
I don't know. I think he might be trying to get rid of NASA. Because NASA does nothing; it's a huge waste, and I know he's criticized it before. If he could take NASA and militarize it and turn it into Space Command, yeah, they're going to take some stuff from the Air Force. But you know, it's very difficult with these bureaucracies to take anything. Remember when they formed Homeland Security, and it was like, oh, it's going to be so efficient because it's going to get rid of duplication and it'll take from the other. What? I don't think anybody shrunk, and we got a big old Homeland Security Department, you know, which supposedly assumed and took stuff. Did any of those people, did the CIA, which gave up certain small segments to Homeland Security, you know, the military, did any of those guys shrink because we had DHS? No.
And no.
They did not.
Okay,
did not
Space shrink. Command. Give me space before we run out of time. You were Air Force, Pentagon, Space Command. What has this been a thing in the Pentagon? They got. We need to get to space. Or were they Air Force already there? I mean, what were we looking at?
The Air Force wants to own space, and I'm sure the other services don't like that because the Navy's out there with more access to space than the Air Force. You know, in terms of their where they can be positioned. So everybody wants more, but. The military itself has said, no, we don't want a space command. They've actually said, no, they don't. And it may be because they are fearful that they're going to lose some of their responsibility. But history tells us that when the government makes a new bureaucracy, nobody loses and everybody gains more. Now,
yeah, you've got two data centers instead of one.
Well, sure, when the music stops. But when the music stops, when the funding ends, when inflation hyperinflates and government collapses, yeah, it will be a problem if these bureaucracies have been divided and put under abnormal stress, which of course they would be as they and I think part of what Trump's policy is to put the bureaucracy under stress, to stress it out, because when you know to find out where the stress cracks are. This is very smart. I mean, you can't find out where the weaknesses are unless you stir up the pot, and Trump does that. So I'm not 100% sure what Trump's push is here. I think it might be ultimately to end NASA, to eliminate NASA, and to stir up the pot in the military and keep them focused domestically so that we can get these troops back home.
Well, NASA's trying to do this. Oh, we got to be around because we're going to Mars in 10. We need more 10-year program, a 10-year, 20-year of years.
What a cosmic suckhole of taxpayer money NASA has proven to be. I mean, you know, I'm sure that Trump, who looks at things like "What have you done for me lately?" Kind of thing, you know, profit and loss. NASA is surely on the.
Well, when I give presentations, you know, I go to events and so on. I'm kind of talking about the future, and I go, "All right, let me tell you what I see." You know, in the 70s, you know, NASA gave me the space shuttle, and I show a picture of the Enterprise M wheeling that out. And I go, and then in the 80s, they gave me the space shuttle, a different angle. And the 90s space shuttle, 10 space shuttles, the other space shuttle. I'm going, this is innovation on government. You know, 50 years of, you know, 40 some years of freaking space shuttle. Are you kidding me? You know, and then we got the ISS that nobody wants anyway. I mean, you know, Elon and Bezos and Virgin Galactic just announced that they're going to be doing space tests here in the next few weeks. Sure. So I'm going, what the hell are they for?
Yeah. Well, they're for jobs. They're for jobs and government jobs and federal facilities. And
well, when's Trump going to be cutting all this fat of government?
Look. If the guy gets reelected, which he has a great chance of doing, and that's still 2 years away.
Yeah, this week.
Then I think he'll be lame duck. He won't care. He'll be 74 years old. I think he's gonna break it down. Now, he may not, because most likely they'll get rid of him before he gets a chance to do that. And I don't mean through election.
Oh, what are you going to think is going to happen in the midterms before we run out of time? Gimme, gimme, gimme.
I don't know. I would have thought the Democrats would have won, but this Kavanaugh thing has, and the way the Democrats behave, they've kind of, they're swirling down the toilet. They're very disorganized. They thought they had this thing going, and yet they ended up publicly looking like a bunch of whiners. And nobody likes a whiner. Nobody likes a loser. You know, this is just straight up, we don't like losers. People, when they vote, they don't like losers. They don't like to go out and vote for losers. They like to go out and vote for winners. So you win the election actually before the election, you know, and Trump did this with Clinton. Clinton was a loser. He called her a loser.
I got to get this in. This is good. One of the hosts at Saturday Night Live, when Kanye West went up and screw you and I'm wearing a hat and suck it that they don't put out and it's just from Chris Rock doing it on his phone or something. And, you know, Kanye was like, ah, you're not going to tell me why I put my hat on. Well, one of the guys goes like it's saying, he's mentally unstable. He's crazy while he's wearing a Hillary Clinton tattoo. I'm going, what? He has a Hillary Clinton tattoo and he's calling Kanye West crazy for wearing a hat.
I'm telling you, it's all good. So I think maybe it'll be. I think the House could be even, Stephen. You know, they could. I mean, you know, the Democrats will gain some, but this is typical. If the Democrats didn't gain votes in this first election after a Republican president, then history is being disproven because it always happens this way.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't trust the whole mechanism machine of BS anyway, and everything's mail-in ballot crap.
Tell you, the Democrats have some good people that would vote the right way, and some of them are under attack within their own party. That's a sign of real weakness too. So, you know, you can't really judge on who wins or who doesn't win. The Speaker Nancy Pelosi, she's like, oh well, the Democrats are going to win, and I'm going to be your Speaker because there's nobody else. That woman.
Yay! That made me feel better.
On the podium, when she has one of these brain freezes, it's going to be the end. And then we'll see what happens then. Because the Democrats have themselves been very frustrated with her leadership and also with this whacked out socialist left wing loudness that's been coming from them. So the Democrats themselves will have an opportunity to be responsible. And, you know, in the old days, and you see this meme all the time with John F. Kennedy. John F. Kennedy was a conservative Republican compared to all the modern-day Republicans and all the modern-day Democrats. So the Democrats used to be able to speak truth, not just to power, but they could recognize liberty. They could recognize, you know, economic forces. They didn't get so obsessed and wrapped around the axle about this, that, and the other thing that is really not fundamental to me. And I have to discount. I'm sorry, you know, 35 years, you were sexually messed with, not even raped, just, you know, pressured, you felt uncomfortable. 35 years ago, it's ruined your life, okay, that's your fault, okay, and you never said anything about it, that's your fault, okay, so the guy had a fault at the one, but you made two mistakes after that, okay, so I don't have sympathy for these people. There's people that don't have food to eat in this country, you know, I think that's much a greater problem than some PhD woman who's clearly had relationship success. She's had professional success. She is not broke. She is not poor. She can travel around the world on a goddamn airplane.
Yeah, but no, the whole thing just.
There's people in this country suffering. There's people in this country, and Trump is right about all this stuff with the whole meth and the fentanyl and the opium addiction and the drug addiction from these doctors. You know, half of West Virginia is addicted to something that the doctors gave them. I mean, look, these are problems. And the Democratic Party used to be able to recognize what problems
were. Oh, no. I see what's going on, Karen. And that's why I want to do this Me Too thing, and we'll have the discussion. Yeah. Because they, them, those are always breaking us down. It's always racially is pretty easy. Oh, you got black and white kind of thing. And then you always got that 50-50 thing. You got men versus women. And then you got, you know, but they never really go after the ideological diversity on campus. You know, yes, we got all kinds of colors and sexual preferences and hair, you know, spiky banking and whatever the hell we got here, but they're all freaking socialist, you know? So I can see what's happening. This is becoming, people are becoming aware of this, and there's pushback. And that pushback, any pushback, well, then you got to be targeted and shouted down and whatever. And they just look stupid, but it's timing. They're so full of hubris of their own methods and opinion that they think they can continually get away with this forever. And with the internet and, you know, somebody bombastic like Trump that's coming out, in your face and your mama, being tempered a little bit by, you know, Ivanka or Ivana, whatever, which one it is, Ivanka and Melania. And Melania's coming out. They did the ABC interview. It's today, I guess, that's going to be released. Mm-hmm. And I'll eventually watch that at some time or something. But this whole thing is, you can see that it's, people have just gotten sick of it, and we don't give a crap what CNN says. Ted Koppel's on the stage with What's-His-Face from CNN making fun of him. They go, you got to go out of business if you didn't have Trump to bitch about.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, in spite of all this stuff, I have my little petri dish of this students I get for this government class that I teach online at the community college level. So I'm looking at young people and people in their 20s for the most part, sometimes the 30s, but usually they're younger. And I've been doing this for 12 years now. And let me tell you, every class is better. They're still not educated, like in the sense of they can write essays. No, they can't do that. But I'm getting, in every class, there's a whole bunch of people that are, you would call kind of socialist leaning or pretty much bought the, you know, you're drinking a Kool-Aid, drinking a government Kool-Aid. But in every class, I'm getting, instead of some classes with no independent thinkers, I'm getting them with one, two. I have four independent thinkers in a class of 17 students.
And that's all it takes.
This time. No, but yeah. So now you're talking enough people that are questioning, that are assessing, and of course they're sharing their ideas with other people. And we try to create an environment where obviously I'm showing them a radical way from an educational perspective. Can you critique this kind of thing? And that allows them some space to say what they think, and what they think, trust me, what they think is they're not buying this stuff. And part of it is because nobody's watching CNN. I mean, heck, I ain't even watching Fox. People aren't watching the news. They're getting they're looking at stuff that interests them. And every once in a while, like, for example, our parts of our history, right? Like Lincoln, for example, right? Lincoln, the big Lincoln myth about that the government puts forward, and we all are taught repetitively. People are finding stuff on the internet that says, hey, did you know this about Lincoln? And they're like, that can't be true. And they look up and they go, oh my God, he's just another politician like everybody else. Hey, great. Now you're starting to understand it.
Yeah, putting thousands of reporters and editors in jail.
Yeah, sure. And the thing about with these memes on Kennedy, and actually, hey, you know, there's a new Netflix show called Chappaquiddick. I don't know if you saw that.
I've seen it up there now, but I haven't watched it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that good, but the very fact that it questions and makes a Kennedy look like kind of person who would use his contacts, his money, and his political clout to cover up a crime. Well, it's okay. Look, we have all kinds of entertainment movies which take that theme. You know, people using their clout to cover up a crime, whatever. We love watching that stuff, but we all realize it's entertainment. But when they did it with Chappaquiddick, it's kind of a docu-pic. You know, hey, guess what? Yeah, it's real. But then you also see Kennedy, as these memes on Kennedy, talking about what he was doing, making him sound like a radical right of Trump, which in some ways he wasn't. People don't know that. And so now they're thinking, hey, wait a minute. I thought he was a Democrat. Wait a minute. What are these parties? And they start to realize, hey, they're the same. They're the same stupid thing. And then what's it all about? Well, it's about, like you said, dividing people. And trust me, you know, men and women like each other, contrary to popular opinion. They like each other a whole lot, okay? And they live together. Guess what? In families, guess what? And they talk about this stuff. Men and women talk about the Me Too movement in their homes, in the privacy of their homes. And guess what they're concluding about it? What do you think they're concluding? You know, I mean, the guy says, look, I don't want to be accused by some girl who had a crush on me or some girl I fired at work or whatever. And then the wife says, yeah, and I know my girlfriends used to. I knew somebody. One of my friends did this. She wanted to get back at somebody. And she did this. How many people have had divorces and been brutalized and punished for it on social media with some things that are true that are, should be private and some things that are not true, right? Right. Everybody has experiences with the reality of life. So the Me Too thing almost is superficial, because when it comes down to actual human beings, men and women together, I don't think that they are making the conclusion that CNN is making. See,
I got to tell you the story before you go. Mm-hmm. This weekend, I get an email from CNN. They want to talk to me about something. So I just kind of like, yeah, whatever. I, you know, didn't pay any attention to it because, you know, spam, mm-hmm. CNN, what do I care? So then another email. I really want to talk. If you really want to talk to me, call me. There's a phone number. So then I'm like, what it was, a guy named, that was Andrew Kerwatsky something. It's called the K-File or something. So he's 28 years old, an investigative reporter for CNN. And that, you know, they give him all kinds of titles, but he's out there scouring the internet for, you know, we hate, you know, conservatives or something.
Sure.
So anytime CNN, the only time I ever do anything with these guys, if it's live on the radio or I'm not talking to you, because screw you, you'll take it with whatever.
Yeah, of course.
And MSNBC, they did, you know, in the, you know, Black Chris with the AR during Obama days or whatever. They were, I mean, multiple times a day talking about me not wanting to talk to them. I mean, they just go, Ernest Hancock. Oh, yeah, they go, he won't go talk. I'm going, yeah, screw you guys. Every time they call, just so that they could go on the air again and say, oh, he just called me, he won't talk to us. Well, I went on CNN on, Sanchez's show or something. And I go on CNN, if you go CNN, Ernest Hancock, it'll come up. And I go on and I played Meek, you know, Golly G. Shuck and G. Willikers, and, you know, and I slap him around a little bit. Well, that's the only one that these national news I've done, because all Fox, MSNBC, they want to cut it up and do whatever the hell they want. Well, CNN agreed to do it live, so I go down to the satellite, whatever, and we do the thing. Well, this kid, sends me these emails. I go, look, why do I care? Why would I want to talk? You don't really want to know what's going on about what's going on. Anyway, here, I think I got it here. I hope you'll be yada, yada, yada. Oh, yeah, I go. They wanted a show that I did interviewing Kyrsten Sinema from 2003 Valentine's Day. And it was my first week of doing radio. And it was before we went into Iraq, and she was heading up an anti-war protest, but she wasn't really, you know, the main primary coordinator. She was interfacing with the local politics, and she was being paid, subsidized on the point for, you know, Soros and Friends or whatever the hell was going on. And all the crowd around her, they were part of the progressive socialist in the Green Party. She was a Green Party member at the time.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
And they took over the local Democratic Party here. And I saw it happening from the 90s, you know, in the mid-90s when it's a long story. So I'm going, all right. Yeah, I see what's going on. Well, she comes on, yeah, but libertarians, and gosh darn it, we won't make you leave if you bring your gun, as long as we can get all the coalition, everybody, a bunch of people down at Patriot Park in Central Phoenix, and we go and protest the war. So I'm going, cool, yeah, we're there with our guns and signs and video cameras and whatever, you know, and kept it more peaceful. So what happened was I wrote an article, God, back in, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, that was talking about, oh yeah, I know what it was. It was after Hurricane Sandy, and one of our magazines was focused, the cover was about, you know, how volunteerists would come and help hurricane victims and not get turned away like this Katrina thing and bass boats so you're not allowed and M16 in your face. So I'm making this point. Well, Kyrsten Sinema is a state legislator here, and when Charles and I were over at Air America, she's down there all the time, you know, and I've known her since back before. So she was all about, coordinating the effort, and I'm a state legislator, it all comes through me because I'm your progressive legislative person to drive the truck into the photo op of pick me. And I'm going, we can just give it straight to the people that need it down here at the Veterans Memorial Coliseum, and we got U-Hauls filled with a bunch of stuff to go to Louisiana, New Orleans, and we don't need, what the hell? You're going to be the bottleneck on this thing? Nope, that was it. You know, the radio station, the progressive movement, everything, Air America was there to facilitate her career. And this is her mindset.
Ah, yeah.
So I'm going, so this is what happened. She's all big anti-war. What Andrew, it's Kaczynski, that's who it is. And he goes, I want to get access, and do you have that file, and we want to get that radio show, because I wrote the article about all this, and here's a link to the radio show, but we didn't have it online. I'm sorry?
Yeah.
So we didn't have it online, and I go, all right, well, we're reloading up and creating our own servers for IPFS and doing that's why it's not there. We'll put it up. I can get it for you if I feel like it. Why would I do it? And I go, and I wrote him back. This was, I guess, Saturday. I go, we have an archive of old shows. Kirsten Sinema and my conversations with her over the years have been very clear of her perspective and intentions. I'll make the effort if you'll inspire me with a good reason. The moment I pull the file, I'd share it with everyone, not just you. Do you still want me to go through the effort? Yeah. And I go, oh, P.S. If I thought the election process was valid and effective, I would have already done this. Am I allowed to not care? Okay. So I was threw it back at him and I go, I don't care. I knew this show is back there, her being all anti-war. And because when she ran against Pal Gamble in 8 or 10, whenever it was, he was making that very point. He goes, it doesn't matter. Keep your vote. Either one of these are warmongering. You know, we'll go down on Netanyahu before he would, or whoever the hell was in charge of BB or something. So he goes, I'm going, Pal, go watch this video. He wrote back and he goes, hey, Ernie, is it possible I can give you a call on this real quick? I can explain. So I go, yeah, call me right now because I got like weekend stuff. So I plugged in my cell phone, turned into the studio and recorded it. Okay. Because Ernie don't talk to CNN reporters unless it's being recorded. That is the way it is. All right. I liked him. He seemed like a genuine concerned kid. And his point was this. Kirsten Sinema got elected on a progressive stances on blah, 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 and being anti-war. And I go, no, she's not. She's opportunist. That's what she is. And I'm telling you, this, you go high enough up on the left, right side of the pyramid, it's the same all seen, we rule everybody. And I go, this military industrial complex of is going to use I've seen it happen with the Cindy Sheehan thing. You can't say phase withdrawal. You got to say phase withdrawal and say, just get out or we're going to pull support. And that's what happened with her. And I go, and Kirsten Sinema knows where her bread be buttered. And I tell you, she is going to be a warmonger just like Pelosi when the Democrats won in 06. And the first thing they did was give a gazillion billion dollars to keep funding the war. And I go, you can definitely get, because they got McSally here, the, fighter pilot, A-10 Warthog, flying, super I love Trump person, whatever the heck that is. So they go, and well, I go, there is no difference. And I go, you want me to, I go, I'll see if I can find it. And we did. And I put it up in an article, and it went to the article that I wrote. It was called the beginning of the end or something like that. And it was an article about Sandy Hook, Hurricane Sandy. And I went through all of this stuff and my experiences with Kirsten. Well, that was the story that they wanted this for, is that CNN is going to do a thing this week, and it's what is today? Thursday? They ain't done it yet. CNN is going to do this big thing on how Kirsten Sinema is not anymore an anti-war voice for, and progressives shouldn't be in, kind of right before the election. CNN is going to go after Kirsten Sinema running for U.S. Senate from Congress. I'm going, no, you're not. I go, man, Andrew, Savior, you're 28 years old. You've been there long enough to know what the fake news is and how they're bastardizing it. I go, get out now, save your soul. This is for you. I'm going to put this all out, send it to everybody, because I'm telling you, they're not going to put this stuff up. I don't know what the hell you're smoking. So he's like, oh, well, we're going to do it. We're going to write it. It's going to be on. And I'm going, you are dreaming. And if they do use it, they're going to bastardize the crap out of it. Well, I didn't post a conversation that I had with them, because I put a bunch of stuff in there that I want, it's good, because if they ever, lie or try and twist it, or Ernie said, I go, really? Well, you want to see the rest of the story? So I put this out for him, and I'm telling you, there is no way in hell they're going to come out against Kirsten from the left because now she's pro-war. That ain't happening. And this 28-year-old kid, I go, I was your age when I first realized what was going on. You have more access to more information, firsthand experience. You're at CNN. You see it. And what are you going to do with your soul there, young man?
Oh, yeah.
I left it at that.
Wow. Well, maybe influence him a little bit. That's good. Look, I got to run because we got something we got to do right now.
Hey, thanks for spending the extra time with me. And I want to do, this Me Too women, your perspective being Air Force in the military kind of thing.
We should talk about it. Yeah, we should talk about it.
Yeah, I want to do this after Angela and I to maybe make you part of the conversation or something. Because, I mean, how tall are you? You're not that tall.
No, I'm short.
You're what, 5'5"? What?
No, I'm like 5'1".
What?
I never, yeah, I'm a runt, man. I'm a runt.
Well, I saw you standing next to Tatiana. She's not that tall. She towered over you. I'm going, damn, Karen's pretty tall. Right. Well, being a small woman, you know, in height sense.
Yeah, but it's not about the size. So
well, that's why I want to get your perspective on this physical threat thing.
Size. No, it's not that. It's not that. It's
well
about,
for you, but it is for these other. I'm telling you, man, it's palpable. I can feel it.
It's they've been, you know. Fundamentally, it's not about the size. Fundamentally, it's about how people live their lives and how they behave. And how they live. I mean, and seriously, you know, people who put themselves in. And Ford was like this, too, you know. She goes to some party drunk with a bunch of kids.
You're not allowed to say that. I was dating a girl in Texas. She was a nurse from England. She told me a story about, you know, she's at a bar. She's drinking all night with these guys. You know, there's a guy and a couple. They go to his house. And then, you know, she didn't want to. And all night of drinking and goes over to, drives her own car over to his house. And he has his way with her. And she wanted certainly sympathy and so on. And, of course, my only thought was, why the hell did you go? You know, I was just like, you know what? Yeah, you know, and then the relationship was over, you know?
Yeah. Well,
and
I mean, you know, it's simple stuff. It's like, people don't own their property. They don't own themselves. And if you don't own yourself, somebody else is going to own it for you. It's that simple. And a lot of these women, they don't understand, fundamental, you know, stuff. But look, I got to go.
I'll let you go. Say hey to your husband for me. Thanks for the extra time, hubby. All right, talk to you later, Karen.
Okay, see you later. Bye-bye. Bye.